I'm Dale Thornbriggen. I'm a professor at a university in California, and I'm up here on a sabbatical leave doing research, but not on cancer or topic or toxic chemicals. I do research in the winter on that chemical there, which is not toxic, but we make it toxic to kill things. So that's what I want to talk about. So I teach and do research. But in my class that I teach this in, the students call it a doom and gloom class. But let's not look on it as doom and gloom. Let's just look on it as we're looking at some of the problems of cancer and what we can do about it. So feel free to ask questions or interrupt if you don't understand something about it. Because I'm a scientist. I'm speaking from a scientist view. Now, most of the things I'm going to say, I can find them all in the magazines upstairs. These current magazines are coming out. Now, okay, it's a fact. In our society right now, the deaths, diseases caused by mutated genes are greatly increasing in our society. Some people say this is our biggest health problem right now. There's the recent Newsweek upstairs says that birth defects are greatly increasing. That's increasing a lot. Miscarriages are greatly increasing. 1 out of 3 pregnancies now end in miscarriages. This is very frustrating for most people. In California, where I come from, they say this is caused by toxic chemicals in the drinking water. Most miscarriages, they're not quite sure. Genetic mutations that we pass on to the future generation are increasing. And then cancer is increasing, both the death rate and the incident of cancer. It's increasing in children, ages 5 to 14. Cancer is greatly increasing in that age group. Skin cancer is increasing 700% in the last 20 years.
Understandable.
But that's a problem in the ozone layer, not toxic chemicals, so I'm not going to talk about that. Okay, you look at a magazine called Men's Health. This is a current one. And somebody from the National Cancer Institute says that the truth about cancer, we're not making any progress. It's getting worse. Cancer rate is increasing, the death rate is increasing, the 5-year survival rate has remained unchanged. So in spite of our progress of advanced medical science, we're not improving cancer for men.
For men only?
No. If you look at this one here, it says breast cancer in women is increasing. Now, in spite of our progress, it's still increasing. 25% of the death rate of women from cancer is breast cancer. Now, that's increasing. So in spite of all our research and modern treatments, cancer is increasing. Now, I got a publication here written by a professor from UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles. It says cancer is not a disease of old age. It's caused by toxic chemicals, primarily. I clipped another article out of a San Francisco paper last spring. In fact, one of my students gave this to me. That says they made a study of the breast milk from women in the United States. And they sampled 900 women in the United States and Canada, and all of them had a high rate of dioxin in their breast milk. Very high rate.
All of them?
All of them, 100% of them. Now, according to this book here, Toxic Chemicals, dioxin is the most potent cancer-causing agent we have ever tested on rats. Not on women, but on rats. Now, This article says that the real problem is if a child breastfeeds, on the average woman in the United States now, the child will receive 700 times lifetime EPA recommended level of dioxin. 700 times a minimum amount.
Has anyone ever done a study where the breastfed babies are more liable to cancer then?
Not yet. Now in Europe, the same thing is occurring. In fact, in Switzerland last year, they recommended not to breastfeed babies anymore in Switzerland because of high dioxin level.
Is the dioxin level a lot less in cow's milk? I mean, isn't there some concentration in cow's milk as well?
It's in cow's milk too.
I would think so.
I'll talk about that in a little bit. Okay, now I want to back up and say, where does this dioxin come from? This is where my research comes into. Where does it come from? How is it getting into the breast milk of women in the United States and Europe? Okay, now the research I do in California, we have a lot of forest down there, and we try to grow trees in them, and we have a lot of Doug fir and redwoods. We also have some tannin trees. They grow in here too. Well, we don't like tannin trees. They don't make good wood. They get in the way. They outcompete our desirable trees. So we try to get rid of them. Now, the easiest way to do that is to use a chemical. So how do we do that? So we're pretty smart in how we do that. We want to do it cheaply and easy. So what we do, I got drawn on here an organic compound that tannin trees use to control their growth rates. It's a hormone. And we can manufacture this hormone synthetically fairly cheaply. Now this is a growth regulator. It's an organic compound made of carbon ring. Almost all living things are made out of these carbon chains. Remember your high school chemistry way back then? Okay, so now we want to follow up these tannin trees. So what do? We find the most deadly element or atom we can find and attach it to this molecule, which is what? What's our most deadly atom that affects life? Chlorine. So what we do is we take off one of the OHs and put a chlorine molecule up here attached to that. We can do that cheaply. Can we make a chemical in that's exactly the same except it has this chlorine molecule on it? Now we go out and spray that on trees. Now the tree thinks that's still a growth regulator. It still uses it. And it causes then the tree to start growing. It never stops. We call that what? Cancer. Okay, that growth regulator, which a tree thinks is telling it to grow, actually starts following up the genes in the tree, causing the genes to grow out of control and eventually kill the tree fairly rapidly. So we call that, we don't call it cancer in a tree. Now, that chemical also causes cancer in rats. It's never been tested on humans. Why don't we test it on humans? Can't do it. Who's going to volunteer? Okay. Now, we used to be a lot better. We used to stick another chlorine on here, the same compound down here. We call that 2,4-D. And we used to take another chlorine, put it over here, and we call that 245T. Now our government's outlawed those because they're too strong. They not only kill trees, but they killed a lot of the people in Vietnam or caused cancer. Okay. Now, we use that to kill trees that we don't want. Now, the farmer does the same thing. If you've got some weeds in his grain crop, use something like this, a different hormone. They'll use a chlorine molecule to use that to kill weeds. They'll do that to kill bugs. They use an organic compound to just take off a few of the atoms and put something else on it, quite often chlorine in it. We do that, we produce more wood, we produce more food. Economically, that's to our advantage. That's why we do it. Now, as far as I know, this book here, in the United States, we manufacture about 70,000 of these compounds like this. Of these chlorinated carbon compounds that we're trying to fool nature with, those particular compounds. Okay, now that's fine, but what happens to that? Get back to my original compound here, the one I work with. So, so we spray this compound on the tree and it kills the tree. What happens to it? That compound. It's out there, and well, there's several things that happens to it. Sometimes, if it rains, it'll run off and get into drinking water. That happens where I live. It doesn't happen all the time. The state says, well, that monitors drinking water, it's not enough to bother anybody. It may cause cancer in rats, but that's okay. Okay, now, the rest of it's still out in the forest. It'll start to break down by decaying insects, fungi, and so forth. That organic compound breaks down, the same as wood will break down, the same as any living tissue will break down. But the chlorine molecule doesn't break down, it stays there. It's still attached to something or other, even though that compound starts breaking down. Okay, still stays there. Now, another thing that happens to it is quite often foresters, they burn the forest when they get done logging. Last spring, I went to a scientific meeting in Seattle where they listened to papers on 3 days about what happens when you burn a forest with chlorine in it. There's 3 days of paper in it. Papers in it. And what happens is when you start applying heat to this, where you have chlorine and organic compounds, what you eventually do with that is you get rid of all these molecules hooked to the chlorine or the carbon, and they're all replaced by chlorine. And this is called dioxin. Right there. It's still an organic compound with all the carbons with a chlorine molecule or chlorine atom attached to it. That's a chemical that bothers us. This goes off in the air and it gets in the water. That's what they were talking about. That
and what kind of heat does it take to produce this reaction?
Pretty high heat. More than what you'd have in the stove or something like that. But or in
I mean like the heat of the sun on the ground?
No, it has to be higher than that. It has to be a fire, fairly high.
You're the person burning the area, like we have friends who are burning the forest area. Would they be in greater danger, do you think?
Well, there's all kinds of other compounds come off fire. If they breathe the smoke directly, some of them are. It doesn't affect everybody the same way. Okay, now that's a source of dioxin. Now, whenever you have heat, chlorine, and organic compounds, you have dioxin produced. And we have lots of industries that put those three together in the United States and the world. A particular one that I can think of where I live is pulp mills. Pulp mills that make paper. How does the paper get white? They bleach it with chlorine. So they take organic compounds, high heat, and they bleach it. So all white paper has a certain amount of dioxin in it. The pulp mills dump dioxin out through their waste products that go in the rivers, the bays, the ocean, or the air out their smokestacks. Okay, now, if I just refer to magazines upstairs, there's one Newsweek of early August. Don't go near the water, they're polluted. There's an article about the Great Lakes. Toxins everywhere. In spite of all their money they've been trying to clean up the lakes, there's more toxins coming in, even though they're not used in the area. There's DDT showing up, there's dioxin showing up. All chlorinated hydrocarbons again, showing up. And they, according to this article here, they bioaccumulate through the food chain. They get in the water, first some plankton eats them, then a shrimp will eat the plankton, then a small fish will eat the shrimp, then a bigger fish will eat the small fish and the bigger fish. Until in here, they say in the Great Lakes, don't eat large fish or you're in trouble. Out of the Great Lakes now. Time Magazine, the same week, had an article about our filthy seas. They said the same thing in New York. They advise women of child-rearing ages and kids under age 15 not to eat fish because of dioxin in the food chain. They show a map of the United States. The whole coastal area is polluted with toxic chemicals that gets into the shellfish and the fish. Even the hometown that I grew up in, Bremerton, Washington says, don't eat the shellfish. I used to live there. We used to eat the oysters right off the beach. My hometown. So you can find that throughout a lot of publications. Now, one of the problems also is where dioxin is coming from. Whenever we burn our waste products, then if there's dioxin in it, we liberate it into the air. Whenever we burn paper, now we create dioxin. So I was listening to presidential candidate Bush. He says, we're not going to dump any more stuff in the ocean on the East Coast. We're going to, if we don't dump it, what are we going to do with it? We're going to burn it. So when you burn it, you create more dioxin in the atmosphere, especially with paper. So now we figure that dioxins are increasing worldwide. No matter where you go, you find dioxin. They're in the water, they're in the soil. So they're getting all our food because they're in the soil and the water. They're fairly low concentration. Now, if I just take one magazine upstairs, this is the Mutiny Reader, which is the latest one, September, October. It's published in Minnesota, so I assume it's factual, right? It's published in Minnesota. I'm not from Minnesota.
What's the name of it?
The Mutiny Reader. Okay. Lead article is Remember Sex, but that's not what I'm talking about. Up here in the corner says, how safe is your food? So this publication is full of articles about toxic chemicals and what's going on. So let me just kind of quote from those. Now, the lead article about how to make sure your supper is safe says that in here. Now, forget about dioxin, but the pesticides that are put on food, which are mostly chlorinated hydrocarbons that are there to fool the bugs and kill the bugs, that almost all our food is now has pesticides on it. And the National Academy of Sciences says in here, this may cause more than 1 million additional cancer deaths in the United States because of this. And the worst thing is the farmers are using more and more pesticides because insects are becoming resistant to the ones that are they're using now. The EPA says pesticides on foods are our most serious health problem. Now, the nutritionists tell us to eat more broccoli because broccoli contains certain vitamins that will prevent cancer. But in here it says all broccoli is sprayed with Dimetan, which is a chlorinated hydrocarbon, which you can't wash off when you cook it. So is that in here? Now this is in addition to the dioxin that's in the water and the soil. Okay, another article in the same one says if you spray chemicals on your lawn to get rid of the weeds, you're liable to increase your cancer. That's another article in here, especially with children. The leukemia rate of families that spray their summer lawns is 7 times that is of the normal population. Let's see. Another article in there. Now, it talks about researchers at the University of Wisconsin, Minnesota, that used to do research on cancer, what caused cancer, now are doing research on how to kill people faster. They're doing research on biochemical warfare, sponsored by our government. They're doing that. They're not studying cancer, they're studying about how to kill people more. It says that in here. Another article in here says that now back east, like Philadelphia, they burn most of their waste. Now, when you burn things, you have ash, which is highly toxic. So what do you do with that? Now they're starting to haul it off to the third world countries because they're poor, they have no regulations. So we're giving it to them because they'll take it. But the problem is that we'll probably get it back in our spinach. That's what it says in the article. Also it says in here an article, there's a food chain gang, their quote, that for the past 9 years, there's always been a bill in Congress to strengthen the federal regulation of pesticides and dioxin. But the food chain gang has always lobbied against that. In the year 85, 86, the food chain gang lobbied Congress with $6.5 million to prevent any stronger bills. The environmental groups only spent $361,000 to try to pass the bills. So they've never passed in Congress over the past 9 years. Let's see. Another one, the same one. Now, another article here talks about our government now is after free trade. Now they figure that free trade is going to make environmental problems worse, because what that'll do is it'll make you can't protect your environment. I'll give an example in the area I live in. We have a pulp mill that produces a specially bleached fiber. They sell worldwide. Most of it goes overseas. They have one competitor in Brazil that makes the same product, the only competitor they have. Now, our state says you're producing too many dioxins. You have to take the dioxins out. The company said it'll cost us $40 million to do that. If you make us do it, we'll shut down because we can't compete. So what happened? The state backed off. So they still dumped our dioxin in the bay and the ocean and the air, because of the problem of competing overseas with a company in Brazil that doesn't have any environmental restrictions on it. Another little article says, the National Cancer Institute says 85% of all cancers caused by contaminated water. Now, I'm not sure where that came from, but it's in here, in this magazine. Okay, now, if I go back farther in one of these Mutiny Readers, in January, it talks about the same problem is worldwide. It's becoming a bigger problem in the third world countries. You take Central America. Cancer is increasing down there, too. Where 20 years ago, it wasn't even heard of. And the problem down there is they have unregulated use of pesticides and herbicides. Most of the agriculture grow single crops for export. They're large landowners. They go after chemicals to increase their crops. And so almost all the water is polluted down there with DDT and endrin. And most of the people get their water from the surface or wells, and it's all contaminated. I had one of my students last year got a job in Ecuador to get a job with a shrimp farm that their shrimp was being killed because of too much DDT in the water they used to grow the shrimp. This is freshwater shrimp. His job was trying to reduce the DDT in the water so they can still sell it. It's all exported to California mainly. But they can't grow shrimp down there because there's too much DDT in the water. When they sample the breast milk of women in Central America, they have 47 times the acceptable limit of DDT in their breast milk. That's higher than what we have. Okay. Now, some scientists feel that we're creating a real ecological disaster here, that we're building up worldwide a concentration of these chlorinated organic compounds that do not break down. They stay in the water and the soil. They don't break down. They end up in all our food now. Okay. At fairly low concentrations, but the concentrations are increasing. This has only occurred over the past 20 years. Okay, now, what do we do about this? So I just wanted to kind of lead a discussion now. The first thing we have to decide, is this fact or fiction? Is what I just said. Are these articles in here? Is it some silly environmentalist just trying to sell an article to a magazine? Or is it for real? We have to decide on that as an individual and society. We can't rely on our government to do it. They won't do it. We have to push the government. Can we rely on somebody else to take care of us? Can we rely on God to take care of us? Or do we have to do something about it? If this is fact, that's affecting all of us. And it's going to get worse. Most science says. A book like this says we can solve it. We can get rid of these toxics. We can live without them. Says we have the technical know-how to do that. But the problem is it's all tied up with economics. And every time you try to get a mill to reduce their dioxin, they start screaming jobs. We'll shut down, people lose their jobs. So it doesn't get done. Okay, so what can we do about this as an individual or as a group? What can you do about it if it's a fact? I mean, we can forget about it and say, I'm getting pretty old, I'm not gonna worry about it.
For one thing, when you think twice about buying broccoli at Lucky Food Stores, which is where I shopping last year.
Maybe as a class project, last spring I asked a class to, in our area, we live in a small town in Northern California, doesn't have any pollutants. Where can we get safe drinking water in this town? So we did this class project. And so we had them look at, okay, our city drinking water. We looked at that. Now we're in a small town, we don't have cities around us, and the water we found out is sometimes has herbicides in it, the herbicide it talked about, which causes cancer in rats. It's not there all the time. It's got asbestos in it, which causes cancer. That's there all the time. And then we get a thing in the newspaper saying it's got lead in it. It says, don't let your kids drink it, or maybe you ought to clean up your pipes. It's always got dioxin in it. It's a low amount, but it's there. And it's got chlorine in it that the city puts in it to kill bacteria. They vary that amount depending upon the turbidity of the water, and it, you can taste it quite often. Now, chlorine in drinking water, I'm not mentioning that, that's a whole different subject. You can go to a library at our university and find volume and volumes of research articles on what effect chlorine has on drinking water on humans. And it's scary, but I won't. So, we concluded our city drinking water was not safe to drink at any time of the year. And this is a small town. If you go down to L.A., it's even worse. You read, I get the publications from the city of L.A. Municipal Water. And they talk about their problems with their water. It's just, it's very scary. It dissolves a little bit in the water. That's toxic. Causes cancer in rats. So we decided we can't drink that. Now, locally we can buy a spring water delivered in your house in a large 5-gallon glass jug. When you ask them for what's in it, it's got dioxin in it, in their bottled spring water. So we asked a chemist, if you boil the water, will dioxin go out? No, it won't. If you filter it, no. So we concluded there was no way to get safe water in the town we lived in. There was no way of getting safe water. So we decided the lesser of all these evils was the spring water in the glass jugs. It had the lowest amount of what we call toxic chemicals. Now, I'm pretty sure if you get into bigger cities in San Francisco and LA, it's far worse than that. So again, what can we do about it?
Well, I've got a bunch of thoughts or whatever. First of all, there are a lot of generalities and statistics. You never know who's doing them or how they did them or how to believe them. Right. There is more and more farming, agriculture without pesticides.
Right.
And there are many groups doing that in Germany and sustainable agriculture and things like that. So that's one area that we could emphasize that universities do research on, and I know University of Minnesota was trying to get a chair on it or something like that, and other places like that. Not all chemicals will stay in a detrimental form. Some do break down into non-harmful other products or whatever like that. So, I mean, I don't know, for all of you, don't believe that every chemical that we're using is going to be bad for us. Another thing is that these things are detrimental to us now. This is our generation, but in the 1820s and 30s when people were having fires in their homes and things like that, those were other detrimental factors to their health, the ash and, well, I don't know, other things too. So they had other things that were causing them.
Well, right, if we didn't use chlorine in our drinking water, we'd have worse problems.
Yeah, things like that.
And we use chlorine for to kill the various diseases we get, right? I mean, that's why we don't stop that, because we don't have a better alternative than using chlorine right now. And one comment you made is good, like, we're fortunate in our Arcata, we have a large supermarket that sells organically grown food, large amounts. And
but you have to watch the term organic.
Yeah, you have to watch that. They go growing free of pesticides and herbicides. Now, even Safeway tells people, if you demand it, we'll stock it in California. So as individuals, we put pressure on our stores, say we want to buy pesticide-free food. They'll stock it for us, and they'll increase the demand. Right now, in, say, our local supermarket, probably you buy pesticide-free food, it's probably three times the cost of the regular food. But the more demand, that will go down. So as what you say, if we pressure them, if we pressure the businesses, that will go down. But that doesn't solve the dioxin problem. That solves the pesticides that the farmers put on it. Now, even President Reagan, most of his food he eats, he tries to eat meat that doesn't have all the stuff in it, chemicals in it, and pesticide-free vegetables and fruit. He even does that.
Well, I suppose maybe what one thing is just getting back to a natural, whatever that may mean, way of agriculture. For beef, don't feed them in lots, let them graze and things like that, you know, and because the feed that they're giving them is chemically, who knows what they're doing with that stuff too. And back to agriculture where you can use natural insects for reducing disease or reducing other insects and things like that. And using more variety of plants. I mean, we've got half the United States is in corn and beans. I mean, that's part of the reason they need all these pesticides, because you've got hundreds of acres of this one crop, and if some fungus starts getting in there, the whole thing is wiped out.
Well, it says in here, that another article didn't mention that, say you take corn, most of corn in the United States is four genetic traits. So that's very susceptible.
Yeah, too.
Because we lowered our genetic diversity of the crops. So that's why we have to use pesticides really carefully, because we're liable to lose the whole thing if we
don't. That happened back 69 or something.
Did it?
Theory. We never used pesticides on our farm, as far as I know. They did use herbicides sometimes, but we didn't use pesticides. It was possible. We grew string beans and fed corn crops and wheat. Like you said, the lack of diversity, and I suppose the larger farming operations use them.
Okay, now it's. I agree. I think it's possible. We've done enough research that we can grow food without using the insecticides and herbicides, but the dioxin is a different problem. Yeah. That's a separate problem altogether. And these articles in here are mainly talking about the Great Lakes as the dioxin buildup, which is not what we're talking about in not using insecticides. That's product of a lot of these manufacturing processes now that we have to control. Now, I'm not sure exactly what's going on in Europe, but the Swedes and the Swiss, and they study a lot, because the main thing they're doing now is they're getting rid of their waste by burning. And they feel that's what's causing the dioxin. Well, they don't have another alternative to burning waste now. So, and if I read what's going on in the United States, we're going to start burning our waste. California, they're going to start burning some, they're going to build a thing out in Guam and burn over there. But still, produces dioxin, it still goes throughout the world.
Well, how else? It's a research problem, I assume, because we either need something else in place of it or something to counteract that in some mechanical process down the line. I mean, so I don't understand how we can help out. Is research being done on developing ways? Is it ever possible that dioxin could be broken down?
Yeah, that's what it says in here, that technically we can do it. We know how to do it, but it costs money to do it.
So just lobby for that?
Yeah, you have to. We have to lobby for that, so as society, we have to lobby our government to increase the regulations and hold to them. I'm a little bit skeptical that will work very quickly. I see what goes on in California all the time. And we think we solve problems, but something else crops up and it gets worse again.
What types of cancer does it cause specifically, dioxin?
Well, we don't know. That's one of the problems, because we can't really prove that dioxin causes cancer. Now, I'll back up then. Again, this one article on breast cancer says, this is nutrition action. It says, breast cancer is caused by eating a fatty diet. Too much milk, too much cheese, too much meat. It's the fat that causes it. And he says it's not toxic chemicals. Now, as a scientist, if I read that, this is what you call a correlation test. He's taken women that has breast cancer, and find out history, and throw them in a statistical analysis, and comes out with, it's correlated with so-and-so. That's where it comes up with that. This guy from UCLA says, no, fats do not harm us. Fats do not cause chemicals. Fats do not cause cancer. It's the dioxin, the chemicals, and the fat that causes it. And he's done studies on that. So I tend to believe the UCLA prof a little bit more than this article here. But now that's two contradictory magazine articles that are fed to us.
Well, they're not exactly contradictory, because if the fat is causing the cancer, he didn't include in his analysis the content.
Yeah,
of
he
the
didn't
fat.
Include that. So in his data, he doesn't talk about chemicals in the fat. Now, I think we get this contradictory stuff all the time, like, nutritionists tell us to eat more fish because it lowers our cholesterol, right? I mean, for a while I started, well, my doctor says to me, my cholesterol is high, so eat more fish. Well, I read these articles that says fish are high in dioxin and bad chemicals because they're bioaccumulated. So you don't know what to believe.
You know, I think 20 years ago there were hints that maybe, just maybe, tobacco could cause cancer. But then
right.
There was all this other stuff. Well, no. And, you know, when I was pregnant with my first child 20-some years ago, my doctor told me to start smoking because it would help the nausea, he said. You know, my husband was a medical student. I mean, we were not in some little backwoods town with some family physician who didn't know. I mean, that was kind of the current thinking of the day, because I'm just looking back and positive that it's not because no one really knew what was going on. I mean, obviously they did know, but the tobacco lobby was very powerful, and still is very powerful. I think this is an economic question, pure and
sure.
simple.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll not have a whole lot of resolution for it until we as a nation begin to realize that maybe life is worth more than the almighty dollar. And, if jobs have to be lost for a while to be retrained for other kinds of jobs, I don't know. Maybe I just don't think our values are there, and I don't know quite how to begin to help people to see that if a factory has to close down, that's not the worst thing that can happen. Maybe the loss of our children and our own lives is far worse. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, now, I'm not an expert on cancer, but if I see, if I read this stuff, that what kind of latest evidence says, well, cancer takes a long time to show up. So if a baby gets a lot of dioxin when they're young, it may not show up for 15, 20 years as cancer. And this is one of the problems with it. So as we don't see the real build up this dioxin problem right now, so the public and the government's not going to act on it until it's really a proven problem. That's what happens to it. But so I mean, I agree with you. Then, as individuals, how do we help society, say, to solve some of these problems?
I'm not sure, but I know that I think for every person like Cesar Chavez, who has just come off a 29 or 30 some day fast, to try and bring to the public awareness the dangers of pesticides, the farm workers in California are dying.
Yeah, they get it first.
They are really, there's whole towns where children are born with birth defects, and yet still they're saying, well, it can't be proven that it comes from the pesticides. But, in fact, the people that work with the pesticides are the ones that are dying, and their children are being born deformed. So, I mean, I think there's one person, anyway, who's taken it seriously enough to try and bring it to the national attention of everyone. I don't know that I'm willing to go on a 30-some-day fast, but, you know, the wrath of grapes is around. It's a video that the farm workers have tried to get out into as wide a circulation as possible. And yet I know a lot of people just, oh, I'm too busy, I don't want to take the time to look at that, or, oh, I don't want to hear that bad news, or people oftentimes don't really want to hear, and you know, just hope that maybe each one of us can begin to try and talk to our friends and neighbors. And I do think that if we as consumers would just realize for one minute the immense power that we have in terms of forcing companies and forcing producers of our food supply to clean up their act, I mean, just 3 days of not buying broccoli, and I'll tell you, they would change. You know, so it's just somehow getting that organized and getting people to realize what our choices are.
Well, that's probably probably right. The best way is, I mean, through the dollar as a consumer. I mean, you insist that you want to buy certain types of products. No, I know, and I'm not familiar with other areas, but I know in California it's fairly easy to buy pesticide-free food now. Yeah. And then other thing you talk about in this Mutiny Reader is one way just for yourself is what to do to hold and eat low in the food chain, because all this stuff is bioaccumulated. Especially by animals and fish, so it's in milk and cheese. And I still go to these meetings concerned with stuff I work with. And again, I went to a meeting in Seattle a couple of years ago where that around Seattle now, all the solid waste from the sewage is put on forests now around the Seattle area. And that has toxic chemicals in it and pesticides and stuff like that that don't get out. And you're talking about, well, what the effect of that was, well, certain fruits concentrate that, which I didn't realize, like blackberries do. And they bioaccumulate certain toxic chemicals again. Some fruits don't. And they said, so don't pick the berries. in the forest where they put their soy sludge on, and don't eat the deer you kill, because they accumulate that in the livers and certain fatty tissue of the deer. So you have to say to eat low on the food chain. It's not that simple to do that, because some fruits bioaccumulate toxic chemicals too. As far as I know, most vegetables don't. And you can buy books now, at least in California, that rate various vegetables on what their pesticide levels are in those fruits and vegetables. So you can get some idea if you buy bananas, what are your chances of getting certain chemicals in? Or if you buy apples, what are the chances and so forth? Even if you don't buy the so-called organic food. And the other way you're talking about is join pressure groups. I mean, I belong to lots of pressure groups. And be active in pressure groups.
We're such a throwaway generation at this point. We seldom eat in fast food places. And coming out here, we came on a tour bus, and we stopped at McDonald's, which is supposed to be a nice clean place, and coffee's good. But everything is disposable. When you're done, if you eat anything, you dump it. And that must get burned.
And you dump more than you eat, I think.
Oh, surely. Yeah, great food things. We have pancakes one day, and it was two of them. I'm pretty shocked.
Are there pressure groups too? I mean, I know that there are pressure groups now because River Pit gets all its beef from Central America, where they bought up all the peasants' land.
We have McDonald's that gets the meat from Brazil, I think. I think that Burger King is better than McDonald's.
Yeah, Burger King supposedly cleaned that up.
They have.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they're worse.
And they're putting some pressure on McDonald's also. There are two things that McDonald's uses: styrofoam, which is a problem for environment, but also they use the beef from South America, where they're cutting down the rainforest in order to graze the cattle there.
But I think it would be really helpful if we could get even a small list of pressure groups and how we could contact them.
But what are the pressure groups now that I'm familiar with California ones? But.
The national ones would be things like the Sierra Club. I don't know if they're maybe more in the wilderness preservation and stuff, but which I'm not sure which ones are concentrating on toxic chemicals now.
The biggest one is Environmental Defense Fund, as far as toxic ones. No, they don't really have local chapters like the Sierra Club.
But they certainly will take contributions.
Yeah. And I don't know, Greenpeace now is, they're going after toxic chemicals in the oceans. And they've been trying to solicit money for quite a while to do that.
Almost all states have the public interest research groups. I don't know if they're, you can check into what they're working on in your area.
In Minneapolis, or I don't know, in other cities too, where you have co-ops, which do have more organic foods, anybody there probably know of something.
You have
like
to read the signs there, though, because some of it is organically grown.
Yeah, but I'm talking
some
about
not.
For people knowledgeable about other groups that are involved, because many of those people are already involved in other groups already. And the International Sustainable Agriculture, that's in Minneapolis, or St. Paul, Minneapolis, and that's through a reduced pesticides, and I don't know what else they're involved.
How many people live in areas where you have big co-ops that you can buy good food from?
Minneapolis? Not so big, but at least available. Mm-hmm.
Are the co-ops still active in the Bay Area?
There's one in Berkeley.
One in Berkeley.
Well, just to put in a small plug for an advocacy letter writing group that meets every Monday night here at Holden, and we write letters. We write letters to senators, to our representative. there's just a number of concerns that we have information on, and we write. That's a small thing, but it's, you know, it does count. It is helpful. And if your representative begin to be aware of the fact that there are a number of people in your area that are concerned about this, you know, you really can make a difference with what you choose to do.
Well, another thing that really bothered me in reading this Mutiny Readers is our government spends $42 million on biowarfare research.
How
much?
$42 million. And we're not even supposed to do that because some treaty we signed back in 1972 or something like that. But that, supposedly according to this article, that's increased. And that's purely how to kill more people faster. That kind of bothered me. We're a Christian nation, we spend a lot of money on that. It's hard to call that defensive weapons. So I think we can still put a lot of pressure on our government. Well, I guess time's up. It's pretty quick.
Thank you.
Thank you.